So I've started the recording now. Hi everyone, this is Nicholas from Internet 2. This is the NetPlus Splunk Community User Group call. We're going to talk about data sources this month. And just a quick couple housekeeping items. Everyone has been either allowed to talk or depending on the version of Zoom client you're using, I promoted you to panelists if you're using an old version of Zoom. Basically, the intent is for us to be able to talk about how we're using Splunk on our campus, and the topic today is going to be about data sources, and I've got some examples on this next slide, so we can talk about what the data sources and what the value you get out of them. What do you do to get those logs? What you've had to do to manage all those logs? Do you get logs from outside of IT? Things like that. And so as part of this this user group call being recorded, it's going to be posted on the NetPlus Splunk Wiki so that if you want to listen to it later or somebody who couldn't make the call wanted to listen to it, it's available for them to listen to and to hear what the community talks about around Splunk. And so everyone should be allowed to talk at this point. And so that's sort of the intro, and wanted to start out with data sources. And maybe since we've got a pretty small number of people on the call, it looks like we've got about 11 or 12 people on the call. I don't think we probably need to do a round of introductions unless we want, but everyone should be unmuted. And so I don't know who wants to start on what are some of the data sources you use in your Splunk implementation? And it may be super boring to hear me talk for like 5 minutes. So if nobody else chimes in, it may be a very short call.
Hey, I'll chime in, I guess. So just about anything you can think of, we import. Including name server.
The DNS logs, okay. And I assume when you say pretty much anything you can think of, those are very focused on IT infrastructure related things and IT security systems
getting those logs basically in? Since we're our environment is distributed, anyone syslogging to us, it's going into Splunk. So if you think about syslog, right, what is in syslog? Everything that's in syslog is coming into Splunk. Unless it's something that's completely unusable, then we parse those things out. We're also importing AWS, O365, all of this stuff as well.
Yeah, and some of us are actually working on and have partial importation of the Google information that exists out there for our Google for Education.
And that's Google Apps for Education?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, right now the Google Apps. So I'm getting like authentication logs and user lockout information and like how much data that they're, each individual has up on the stores right now. Mm-hmm. Still trying to parse out alerts that are coming in and at what severity that they might be.
We consume a lot of data from Google as well. We've got separate domains for students and for staff. We're actually getting ready to consolidate and move to O365 for mail and calendaring, but we do collect a lot of data from Google. We don't do much alerting on terms of content because we use CloudLock and the CloudLock app for Splunk to do DLP and look for that kind of content on Google Drive.
Is anybody consuming Azure AD sign-ins?
Yeah, we're doing that as well. We have AD on-prem, we have AD in AWS, and we have Azure AD.
Gotcha. And did you write your own app for the Azure AD, or are you using something from Splunk Base?
I'm using something from Splunk Base, yeah.
Would you mind sharing what you're using?
It's the Splunk app for Microsoft Cloud Services.
Okay. Thank you.
And then there's an add-on for Azure AD.
We're using that as well, but I also started up with Microsoft. You can set up a SIEM exporter as well. And so I use a combination of the SIEM exporter as well as the Microsoft add-on for cloud services to make sure we're getting all the data, because I found each one, depending, is missing data. But by having both of these running at the same time, we're getting, it seems to be, a lot better results.
Gotcha. I've heard very similar feedback from other institutions that are trying to consume Azure logs. For example, the Microsoft Cloud Services app, I think, was getting good audit logs from the infrastructure as a service side, you know, like if you log into a subscription or make an action within a subscription, but it wasn't really getting the Microsoft side of, say, ADFS sign-ins or logins to the Azure portal, things like that. It was missing.
One app that our security team has really liked is, there's a app out there called the Blue Team app for Office 365 and Azure. And that provides a lot of valuable insight into activity in that environment.
Thank you.
Sounds like Office 365 logs are a pretty popular sort of discussion topic. So I'm not sure if anybody's used any of the Wren ISAC. They had some logging guidance around Office 365 for SIM. It's been a while since it's come out, maybe 6 or 8-ish months. Has anyone been using that? Let me see if I can track that down real quick, and I'll put it in the chat.
No, I have not used that, Nick. I think that was a lot more focused on monitoring email activity in Office 365 and you know, like SharePoint, things like that. And not necessarily authentications from a security standpoint.
Okay.
But it could be both. I'm not very familiar.
Yeah, I'm just looking through the page right now. It's describe what O365 logs are available per common EDU license type. Describe how and what tools the logs can be accessed. Describe how the logs may be exported to external tools, scripts to retrieve the information, and some.
And oh, by the way, you know, I was a part of that group that was putting that together, and we had some discussion about the licensing levels and all of that. And what I finally discovered, and I'm not sure if everyone knows this, is you can buy a single elevated license. So for the SIEM exporter, for example, we bought an elevated license for that one account so that the SIEM exporter is exporting a lot of useful information that otherwise we would not be getting if we didn't have a license. So we didn't need to have our entire number of accounts elevated to a certain license, just that one single account. They just bill us for that one account and it's all good.
That's good to know. Thank you.
So let's see, we've talked about Office 365 account logs, Google account, Google Apps for Education accounts, infrastructure sources that I probably have already listed in that slide. Anything that, like from the infrastructure that we're missing, like I've got firewalls, intrusion detections, intrusion preventions, flow data, which could be from a number of different types of tools like Zeek and things like that, DHCP logs, NAT logs, any other types of VPN systems?
Written a custom add-on to pull in data from our BlueCat IPAM system. And then another one, the ones that were out there for Cisco Prime infrastructure were kind of lacking. And so I wrote one for that as well. And so we do all of our wireless and wired authentications. And then we've put in you know, geo-coordinates for all of our campus buildings. So if we have a missing or stolen device, you know, we can track approximate location, you know, using some of the map visualizations in Splunk.
That's really interesting.
It has some, I guess, some big brother potentiality as well. You know? Right. Where's my boss at right now?
Right. Well, that's maybe something for a future call, but there's been some interesting, when we start talking about like application data sources and some of the things around student success, and being able to identify when a student might potentially fail a class within the first couple weeks of class based upon like how often they've logged into the learning management system and how, and if they've been in the library and where they've logged in from, and having that correlate to whether or not you're going to pass a class and then what action happens. That is a very interesting privacy and ethics sort of discussion, maybe for a future call.
Well, this is Darren at NC State. So we have a lot of the standard logs that we have up here that we've discussed, though we are missing some of the things we'd like to have, like our DNS logs or flow logs, although I'm not sure we're going to be able to afford to do all flows in Splunk. But one of the things that we've historically gotten from some of our internal groups is we have a lot of homegrown tools, sometimes web tools, sometimes scripting tools, to do various administrative things. And we've worked with those folks to create, for them to create application logs for us. Usually we just let them, help them map the actions that are being taken to one of the common information models or one or more, and use standardized fields, usually in just the field equal value syntax textual, so we don't have to write any custom format. They just go ahead and use the fields we tell them. And then we've been able to build reporting for our help desk for both auditing as well as just troubleshooting to see what has gone on with a particular account or machine in the past. We have recently started up a HTTP event collector, and we're working with some developers to start taking advantage of that, especially maybe with more of the cloud deployed things that don't necessarily have a server, but they're just, you know, PHP scripts that run. They can go ahead and send us a JSON blob and get that done. So application logging, a lot of our devs are really excited about that because they don't often have much access to logs on the server, and the HTTP access logs are sort of just side effects of the applications being used, whereas logs generated from the application are much more useful for the devs, and we can get those right back into their hands with Splunk. So that's been helpful.
Hey, this is Patrick from UNC. I would just echo a lot of what Darren just said. We have all of our major application stacks providing log information to Splunk. We typically delineate developer logs into one index and server logs into another, but depending on who you are and what your access is, you may have access to both of those. The other one that we would mention, just because it hasn't come up yet, is we do all of our vulnerability management reporting. We use Qualys for vulnerability management. We are also bringing that information into Splunk because we think we can get enhanced reporting that's a little bit more challenging to get from Qualys themselves.
And then you can sort of merge that data with some of the other sort of some of the other tool data to get a picture of what's the risk on this particular thing, and should we try to patch this now? Because if you're not seeing scans for it, maybe you can wait until your next patch cycle versus immediate patching.
Well, it's almost even a little bit different than that. The typical report that I would get monthly was several hundred pages long. By doing it in Splunk, I get a report that's a couple of pages long. So we've been able to kind of reduce a lot of the noise that you get with the canned reports that come up. My Splunk architect also built an aging system. You know, how old is this vulnerability? Did it get reopened? Did it, you know? And so we have a relative age about how long that vulnerability has been there so that we can stay within compliance to our security policies.
That's cool. And that's something that's, it sounds like that's something you built custom. There wasn't like a Qualys app for Splunk or something like that that you could start with, or is that all just totally homegrown?
I believe we used a TA. I'd have to confirm that with him to get the data, and then we built a custom app on top of the data that was pulled.
Cool, thanks. Other times when I've talked with campuses about logs, getting authentication logs into their Splunk implementations or their SIMs, one of the identity management or SSO systems, like getting Shibboleth logs into their Splunk. And I think that probably probably most of the camp, my assumption is most campuses try to get those logs, or if you're not using Shibboleth, you're using CAS or something else, and that you try to get those logs as well into your Splunk implementations.
Yeah.
Anybody not doing that, or have something to say on that?
This is Albert Rice. That we worked a little bit on with Ren, other Ren people online to get this SHIB app going. And so we've got our SHIB data coming in using the SHIB app that was created by the Splunk team.
Okay, and good.
And the Ren folks, it's pretty interesting though. It helps do the SIM model correctly, so you're able to do unified like authentication sources and correlation with like Radius or Heavy.
Did you say there was a SHIB app for Splunk?
Yes, there is.
Okay, cool.
Let me go dig that up and I'll put it up in the chat.
I did some really gnarly regex matching on SHIB logs to pull out the data we need, but if there's an app that does that, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's a whole lot better to do it that way. Brew your own.
So you're going to go track down that URL, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll do that.
Okay, right. Thank you. Then I'll put, basically, I'll put it in, I'm taking some very rough notes, and if it goes into the chat, it'll be posted on the wiki so people can find that later. Thanks, Albert. I got that. So we just put in the chat the link to Splunk Base for the SHIB app. So how about for some of the other log sources, like we've talked about some of the web apps, but I assume this is, most campuses is a web app, but if you're using Banner or PeopleSoft, or other similar types of student information systems, ERPs. Are any of you getting those logs into your Splunk environments?
We're definitely doing the Banner, at least the web stuff, because we had a rash of banking fraud with direct deposit fraud that was hitting a lot of the universities a few years ago. So that's been a requirement for all of our new implementations for Banner. And then we do just, you know, general host and logging of the database itself.
Yeah, and we do PeopleSoft. That would be everything in PeopleSoft web, in the Tuxedo servers, and in the database tier.
Ditto PeopleSoft and also Workday as an ERP.
And Workday. Okay. So that's kind of what I'm expecting to hear. It's like you want to put things, as many things into your Splunk implementation to be able to see, to have as much visibility over what's going on in your environment. So that, for example, when you're doing an incident response for a direct deposit fraud, well, where's that authentication? Where did that authentication come from? What other things did they access? Did they only access the direct deposit page and so forth?
Hello, my name is Bin from Nevada. I want to know, how do you guys do the PeopleSoft stuff? What kind of data do you get?
We get the web logs, we get the server logs, we get database activity and audit logs, the Linux
logs. how did you get the log file? Did you put a universal forwarder on the server?
Yeah, there's forwarders on all the entire PeopleSoft infrastructure.
Okay. Do you guys have a performance issues? I tried to talk with the guys here, try to get the logs. They said they always against us to provide the universal forward. They said, no, I don't want to put a universal forward on my server. Do you guys have that kind of issue?
No, we don't have any performance issues by doing that.
Okay. So for us, the problem is the PeopleSoft the server are behind the load balancer. The people in the PeopleSoft guy told me that, I saw the data in the PSC access log. The server, the client IP address is not the balancer IP address. Is not the true correct user IP address.
You need to configure PeopleSoft to use the X44 IP address so that you get the client IP.
That's the same problem
when we first did it. All of our load balancer logs also go to Splunk as well, so we have the ability to look at load balancer issues versus web servers that are behind it, whether it's in the DMZ or a trust zone.
So what you said is if you turn on the feature X for the four feature, they will pass on the correct user IP address to the PSC log access log table?
Correct.
Okay, so if that, that'd be good. We are trying to do that right now. May I have your contact address? Where are you from?
I'm from the University of North Carolina. The easiest way to get in touch with us would be splunk@unc.edu.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think, are you a dev? What's your name again?
This is Patrick. Dave is my Splunk architect. He's the brains of the operation.
Oh, I see. I got a email contact with Dev, two months ago. Good. Thank you for the confirmation I got. Then I talked with the people here, confirmed that we're doing good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what I would tell you, our experience was it was very difficult initially to get people to think about it this way because they were so accustomed to looking across logs via, say, the Windows Explorer. And then, you know, they'd go to host one, host two, host three, and so on. Once we started showing them how you could do that in Splunk with one command without having to go through all these individual things, they were very quick adopters. It took a little bit longer to get the developers to do more. But from an infrastructure standpoint, the PeopleSoft admins are one of our biggest users of Splunk.
Okay, cool. So basically what you do is that put a universal forwarder in the PeopleSoft server, collect all the log files, then basically that log file information is browsed in Splunk can be used by the PeopleSoft guy to troubleshooting to see load status, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit more to it than that, but that's the basic idea. If Dave didn't already pass it along, we can certainly pass a little bit of information. My team's not PeopleSoft experts, but we were heavily involved. And again, Dave did most of the heavy lifting there to be able to do that.
Okay, good. My email address is... Right now, I send out bili@nc.nevada.edu, basically in the system level called Nevada System of Higher Education. If you would please send an email, I know your email address, I can help you offline, would be great. Thank you very much.
Sure. I'm sure probably everybody's dealt with that concern about the impact of the forwarder at some point in their Splunk journey. I know we had that a hard time years and years and years ago with the DBAs and the banner admins being resistant to putting it on their database servers.
Yes, but my experience goes through like 2 years. I really did not see any performance issues, but just the bias. I would say just bias, a panic. Not really an issue. I think Splunk did a very good job on the universal forwarder. I will say it used lots of network traffic issues, but not a server issue at all, not CPU memory issue, just if you have good network bandwidth, that's good enough. Just my point. Could be wrong.
All right, good. So it sounds so that covers PeopleSoft, talked a little Workday. Sometimes when I think of the database logging, Oracle, Microsoft, whatever the database you're using, that sort of rolls into some of the general application logging. How about some of the other things like physical access? Like if you use Blackboard Transact for managing doors, or things like that. Are you logging that type of data as well?
We're just now in the process of, we're doing through remediation of a physical to cyber audit. So access to SCADA systems, to UPD cameras, GWorld access for our card readers and door swipes. And that's just a long list of remediation we've got to work through.
Is anyone else including that type of data?
We added the door swipes into our systems, but we actually have two different systems now. They're growing another one for our remote sites, and we haven't got those logs quite yet, but we will hope to have those so that we correlate physical access when we're trying to do some of our HR investigations.
Back to incident response.
Question, what kind of HR investigation? Just curious. If you don't want to share, that's okay. Because I have a request from months ago. It's also HR related question about the performance issues, but I don't feel like in a security team or this kind of data can provide, I mean, true evidence about the person's evaluation performance. So I just feel weird question. May you share what is your experience?
Well, we've used it for two different types of investigations. So we've had some employee fraud. So if you can get your buddy to check you in every day so that you don't, your time clock looks like you work all day and you don't, that was one of the investigations that we did. But we're an academic medical center. So HIPAA violations for access to patients that are not part of your care plan are very serious offenses, and we use some of those logs when we're trying to prove the person's presence at a particular workstation, because a lot of times they'll go, well, I didn't look at that, somebody else must have got on the computer. So we use things like door swipes, time tracking, those kinds of things to, you know, try to prove that the person is in multiple ways, you know, showing up in a single place. So,
and that's where, this is Nick, that's where from my previous campus experience, it's been working with your public safety or HR or general counsel to make sure that they have established policies and procedures around some of this so that you're protecting the employee privacy. Along with making sure that appropriate things are being done. And so it's, to me, it's very much a, we'll collect all this data, and then there's some really significant policy discussions, particularly around privacy.
Yeah, I mean, we've got a whole big process, you know, for every type of investigation, we will have to make sure that, you know, the head of HR signs off on it, the head of legal. We have three different compliance offices, internal audit, those kinds of offices, depending on the kind of what we're looking at. We require their approval to do any of that. Otherwise, yes, we can't provide that information just to a leader, a manager or any of those kinds of things. You can't do any of it without it being an official investigation. So sorry, got off on
cool. that topic,
but. That's good.
That's good. Yeah. I like to hear different experience, make sure I'm doing the correct thing, not against the law.
So it sounds like one person on this call is getting EHR data, electronic health record data, or log data into their Splunk implementation. Anyone else? Or maybe even in a student health clinic, or maybe not from a health system or hospital perspective, but from the...
Yeah, our School of Medicine is a separate IT organization, so it's a black box to
right.
me.
Right.
I am surprised, though, that I don't hear more people speaking up about needing to collect the physical access, because, like I said, we had to do an audit, and that was called out as something that was high priority for mediation, for access to student dorms, for access to the building control systems. We have research labs with nuclear materials, access to the police cameras, things like that.
We do have a need to collect that information specifically for our data centers for PCI compliance. It is being collected in the CBORD system itself. We are working to get it into our Splunk system. That is a political challenge, but we continue to work on that. We are actually getting some data or soon to get data from the student health system, but it's not going to contain PII, at least it should not. So it should not expand our HIPAA scope. It's more about auditing use or access. We'll see.
That's where the person before Darren was saying that there's the somewhat of the health system or the health stuff is a black box off from central IT. I think that's a pretty common common setup in lots of campuses, and that may be changing in some to be more centralized. And that's where I'm trying to better understand like how many campuses are trying to move those things together and are now trying to put all of that into Splunk, into one implementation. And now they're going to huge amounts of data. Cause I know logging out of EHRs sometimes can generate a huge amount of data. Right.
Yeah, I guess, I'm somewhat unique. So the Medical University of South Carolina, our academic side is all healthcare programs.
Okay.
And then, four hospitals. So we don't have kind of the separate instance because pretty much everything we have falls under, we just kind of consider it all HIPAA because most of our nursing and research people, they're all working in patient data with access to our EHR. So yeah, we just kind of are that black box. It's just us. So
thanks for that clarification. So there's the learning. I think the only other thing that I could think of is like learning management systems, but that's sort of like a subset of applications. Like Canvas, Blackboard, D2L, things like that. I assume most campuses are getting your LMS data, at least logging data into your Splunk implementations.
Yeah, we're bringing all of our Sakai learning management system logs right. into the system. And we're also using that data along with data from PeopleSoft and external systems like Pearson to do student success work.
Okay.
Our learning management folks have said that the difficulty in leveraging that data for detection of student success problems lies often in the case that there is very little standard in how the professors are putting the data into the system. Quite often they don't record it in a timely manner because they don't need it in a timely manner, or they record it in a just non-standard across even separate sections of the same course. And without a great deal more standardization than we have, they have been, it's not a new thing for them to try to analyze that data to look for warnings or problems, but it's difficult because of the non-standardization.
And that's where that's not really, I mean, there is a technical component to that, but it's getting the people to record the faculty to record the data in a timely fashion so that if you wanted to do student success, you need to have that data first, and it needs to be updated, or know that you're not going to have that data and that you need to look at other sources of data to try to figure out if there's any proxies for the data that you don't have to be used for student success.
Yeah, we have a new sort of a biotech group. So we're hoping that they can start a project on a mind control device that's sufficiently powerful to work on faculty. And then we can help address a lot of problems on campus.
I hope that sarcasm comes across in the recording.
I'm sure it will. No. There are a lot of reasons that we have non-standard business processes across the university. Things are very different, and it is difficult to argue that things need to be run the same way only to satisfy a particular IT system. So we are often just working on adapting instead.
Right. Okay, so
I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Has anyone dealt with the challenge of people outside of IT wanting access to the data that's in Splunk? For example, we have a researcher who's one of the faculty who's interested in doing machine learning, and we've kind of had a long-running battle trying to, you know, raise the issues with PII and other, you know, potential confidential information in the logs.
Well, we have here at UNC, we've had people, including the registrar, log into Splunk to get business data. Typically, we try to put them in the roles and then segregate what they can see solely because of some of the issues that you brought up. But you can think about things like the student success project, or you can think about some of the student information where maybe you have famous athletes who went to school here and being able to track that from a business perspective as opposed to, or business or academic perspective as opposed to an IT operations perspective.
And so it sounds like, I suspect what it's around some of the governance and making sure that the registrar's office, they know that, or maybe for some campuses, they are the data owner for certain types of student data. And so they want to be able to report on that data, and you have the governance in place that says they can look at that data. And then you can say when you're going into Splunk that, oh, this is student data, or we can set up an index or an appropriate report so that they can report on the data that they should have access to. Is that kind of what you're saying?
I think that's a fair characterization. What we ended up doing for the registrar in particular was limiting their role via search filters so they could only see PeopleSoft hosts, as an example, opposed to all of the other applications that happen to have hosts in that same shared index. But it's the same general idea as, yes, if you've got a mature governance process by which you're handling roles and access to the system, you can do pretty much anything.
And that's where our challenge is, as the researcher, as an information security researcher, and wants access to everything without, you know, realizing really the implications of kind of the profiles you can build up on people by, you know, correlating all these different data sources. So there's a huge lift in order to, you know, anonymize the data to be able to do that, and just not something we have the manpower or the interest in doing right now.
Right. Have they talked to, like, back sort of, when I think of governance in this scenario, I would think that the IRB could be helpful in trying to figure out some of those things. Is that an option?
I think because each brings in so much in the way of grants, the university higher ups are determined to eventually make this happen in some fashion. Yeah. So.
Right. So that could go with some future discussion around privacy ethics, and maybe expand that out into governance of making sure that, that when you've appropriately vetted and approved some of these student success things, so that, and you're transparent about it with as appropriate to say, you know what, we're using it for this reason. It's to help students, it to do better in their classes and to graduate on time, things like that. And that we've taken these types of safeguards to make sure that we're protecting your privacy because of the sensitive nature of what you're doing.
As an aside, so I have sat on our IRB as a voting member for, 7 or 8 years now, since we had a fairly sensitive breach that involved research data. And that's been an incalculable benefit to educate our IRB about data security. We've improved that a lot across campus, but we discuss the risks of correlated data re-identification a lot as we deal with more and more electronic data on human subjects. They are a good bulwark against risk, but the answer is almost never no. It is in general, what do we have to do to protect the human subjects from consequences, from risk? It's also the case that, you know, one can have agreements between departments like security and a researcher group, but it's sometimes politically that's difficult to enforce. However, if it's part of an IRB proposal and the IRB proposal is broken and someone is in noncompliance, that has much more serious consequences for researchers than simply a departmental staff department like security being upset about things. So, you know, leveraging IRB there is certainly one possible route to give yourself a larger enforcement stick.
Okay, good. So back to the log sources, anything that we've missed so far? Because basically, my thought was we talked about what the sources are and then talk about what's the most value for a little bit. And I don't know if we'll have enough time to go into the value discussion, but are there any types of log data that we haven't talked about so far?
I think the most interesting one I've been asked to do recently is the Watson chatbot logs and using that to kind of enhance our service in terms of where we need to have kind of self-surface information in the knowledge base and what kind of answers we need to populate the chatbot with, what people are looking to get assistance with.
I would not have guessed that. That's really interesting. And so it sounds like that's to provide better service for trying to find helpful information. And so by identifying what they're looking for, you feed that back into the AI and Watson to improve the sort of the response of here's what you're looking, or the response to the question of what are you looking, or of what they're looking for.
Yeah, and to lower the support costs as well for the students.
Is that a lot of data?
It's ramping up. It's a fairly new tool. We just started using it in August of last year, and you know, we're building a lot of workflows that are launched by the chat process. So, for example, registering a gaming device for the network and things like that. So I expect it to continue to ramp up, but it's fairly small amounts of JSON data.
Anything else? Okay, so we've talked for about 45 minutes on the data sources, and my hope was to get into the next thing was what has the most value and what you do with those logs. I'm not sure if we'll have enough. Do we want to talk about that? So the intent of this call is to have just this type of discussion, and I don't know if we'll have enough time to talk about the providing what logs provide the most value. Do we want to save that for next month, or do we want to, or we can just keep going right now and see what we get through? Any preferences?
I would tend to think you might want to push that, because I have a feeling we could go longer than 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind that, just going to the third point about what do you have to do to get to them. And just some operational challenges, if people have them or what they've done, if that may be a smaller discussion.
That's a good point. So one of the things that, actually I think a couple people on this call were on a panel. We did a panel at EDUCAUSE Security Professionals last year. And one of the things we talked about was having like a log evangelist that would go and work with all the various people on campus to get the data into your system. And so that's kind of the person that I'm thinking of, or the role. But somebody needs to go out typically to do that work with, I don't remember who was talking about when you went and talked to the PeopleSoft admins and said, oh, you were looking at one host at a time. I've got a better tool for you that you can look at all your hosts and save you a bunch of time. Let's put your log data into Splunk, and now you can look across all of your hosts rather than having to look at one host at a time. Is that what you've been doing, or is there somebody on your team, or what do you have to do to get those logs?
In a lot of ways for us, it's kind of been more build it and they will come. I mean, we've really started initially, you could call it evangelizing, but just getting central ITS to get their logs into Splunk, and then just try to use that in every opportunity we can. As we've grown, more departments have seen the value in being able to search for their data in Splunk. And we've tried to make getting data in relatively easy, at least to try to minimize the barriers for getting in. So we don't do a lot of control as to who gets to install it, how do they decide what they want to log, that sort of thing. We kind of keep the framework open and do a minimal, and kind of just stay out of the way of getting people, getting in their way of getting that data in there. So we do kind of, you know, help them along the way, but, you know, it's very distributed. Most of the campus units manage their own forwarders, for instance, but we've gotten a fairly extensive set of documents on how to configure those. And then we use the deployment server to ensure at least the basics are set up properly, like, you know, the deployment configuration and the inputs and the required keys to be able to talk to the infrastructure and stuff. So, you know,
how do you balance
it easy?
How do you balance that with your license limits, having that open structure? I mean, because we often find that, you know, like there'll be a platform upgrade, we'll replace the firewalls and we'll go from, you know, 40 gigabytes a day to, you know, over 100 gigabytes a day, you know, because of changes in the verbosity and the number of devices or the configuration of the devices, or, you know, we've had that with Windows as well. We've seen exponential growth in the Windows server logs. So we kind of constantly have to balance the operational needs of the security department, which is the group paying for Splunk, versus the evangelizing, you know, use of Splunk to other departments and getting them to put, you know, not so security focused data in it.
Well, yeah, there a lot of it for us is just reporting and detection. So I've gone through and have written fairly extensive reporting and tracking of log usage by host, by index overall. And then when we see anomalies, for instance, if something does go up double or you know, triple or quadruple, we get emails and alerts right away. So you do kind of got to keep on it on a day-by-day basis and track your growth. But generally we find that it's central ITS is by far the biggest logger, 90% of the data, 90 plus percent of the data. A lot of the smaller campus IT units, we have a kind of a loose agreement that if it's going to be more than 5 to 10 gigabytes per day, then we really got to start talking about how we're going to handle that. Thankfully, we've been able to control the growth enough that what we have for licensing hasn't restricted us too much. I guess when I say that, we've had a number of systems, especially when we talk about like secure NAS data where, you know, or when security wanted to start pushing in audit D data where, you know, we gone from 800-900 gigabyte to 2 terabytes. So then it becomes a fairly involved effort to try to prune out what's not necessary and try to, you know, work with security to make sure that only the important bits of data are getting logged and then filter out the garbage. So there is a fair amount of care and feeding in that process, but overall, I think it's worked pretty well to do it that way.
The other thing that I would add to that, so again, this is Patrick, and that was Dave that was just talking from UNC. The hardest logs to get to us haven't been machine logs. It's been business logs, where you actually have to work through the actual data governance processes you have at your institution. So if you're going to get admissions data, you have to work through the data stewards in the admissions office. Student data, you got to work through the registrar and so on, because you're having to explain a fairly technical environment to a business customer as opposed to a technical customer.
And that's the technical team is doing that, or the business owner who wants to use a system is doing that?
It's a joint effort.
Okay.
We usually find that having the technical people sit with the kind of the our at first customer and then sit with the data stewards can kind of shortcut having to have 10 meetings, maybe have 2 meetings and work through it and answer the questions and concerns that each audience might have.
We've got about 1 minute left, and so I'm not sure if we have enough time for any more discussion. So what I'll do is we can hold the what data sources you get the most value, and then any additional discussion on what you had to do to get these logs for our call next month. And then if there's any specific questions that you want to talk about with the group, let me know by the next call. And I'd like to thank everyone for attending, and I will get this posted on the NetPlus Splunk Wiki probably in the next day or two. So thanks everyone for attending this month.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nick.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, Dave.
Darren, he says bye too.
Bye. Okay.